This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Cliff Simpson,
Pat Hennigan,
Jeff Brennan,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Cliff, you came to the Fielding area in around 1950, 51?
Oh, no, it was about 1948.
Oh, 48, okay.
Yeah.
So, and that was the end of a journey. You'd grown up and done various bits of work, and then you came here.
Yes,
so
I was a stock agent in the South Island with an old company named the New Zealand Loan and Mercantile. And anyway, after working some years in various districts down there, I was then approached to see if I'd like to come to the North Island.
Okay. Now, you're a stock agent.
You're a stock agent then.
Which means what?
Oh, well, you're dealing with people, except buying stock off somebody and selling to somebody else.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You see?
So here's
saying
the Fielding.
Some of it would be going into the sale yards, some would be sold privately, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And of course, then I... After being approached by a freezing company from up here, first of all, my brother said to me, he said, "You're not going to the North Island, are you?" He said, "There are only pig islanders up there." And of course, he had a thing about that because he was in the army, and of course they used to have one another on a bit, I think, and of course this is why he said, "Don't you go up there to the pig island."
That sounds a bit like in Britain, the north and south of England, and the divide there.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so how did you, first, just very briefly, how did you get into being a stock agent? You grew up on a farm.
I was born on a dairy farm, and when I left school,
which would be about when?
About 1947.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I joined the Loan and Mercantile. That's when I left school, and then after going through the process of being a stock agent, I was approached by this North Island firm to see whether I'd come and be a stock buyer.
Yeah.
And that's then you're only dealing with the farmer direct to the freezing works.
Oh, okay.
There was not. Yep. There was no other than that. You were drafting stock with the ability that you had of being able to judge the weight and value of stock, and then it was sent off to the freezing works and killed.
And was it the same breeds in the North and South Island?
Oh yes. A lot of them were the same. Yes, they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the breeds changed a lot over the years. Yeah. Over those few years too.
Okay. Mm. So how do you learn the skill for that?
Oh. Well,
Is there a training course?
Yes, you used to go out with other... at one stage, when I was younger, I went out with other agents and learned how to draft stock and sort them up and...
Yeah. Draft stock and sort them up. What does that mean?
Well... You'd be drafting them and you'd sort the ones out that you wanted and put a chalk mark on them.
Okay.
And then you'd sort those out, you'd draft those off as they came up the race. You put the ones with a mark on one side and the ones that didn't have a mark on the other side. The ones that were marked went off to the works.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing.
And did people specialise in sheep? Or beef, or were you doing all of
them? Oh, yes, did all of those.
You did all of them?
Yes, that's right. But the sheep were the our main thing at that time, because I was heavily involved with that, because I was tied up at that time with the big increase in numbers of sheep in the country.
Oh, yeah.
She's got up to 90 million at one stage. I think it's down now to about 30 or 40, isn't it?
I think it is, about 30-something million. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we were...
Yeah, because that was the time when it was paying really well as well, was it?
Yes, yes, they're paying pretty good money for them too. Yes, yeah, yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yes, but it did change a bit. When I first went on the road up here, I think we only got £2. £2 for a lamb.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden the price went up, and that's when farmers really did very, very well then.
The Korean War, wasn't it?
That was for the wool.
That was the wool, yeah, not the meat.
But that was just about, yeah, that was a bit earlier. Yeah.
1951.
Yeah.
So where was the meat going? That was going to Britain? Or
to the UK, yes.
The UK.
Yeah, yeah, you probably ate some of that. Yeah. You come
very
from there?
Probably, yes, I do. I came from Yorkshire, so yes.
From Yorkshire?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh. So, yeah. I was just wondering about your accent, you see. I knew it wasn't German.
No, not German.
We didn't like the Germans at one time for some reason.
Ah, I wonder why.
Yeah.
But actually, so you were at school during the war, but you mentioned before we started recording your father was in the First World War.
Yes, he was.
Mm.
Yes, he was. And he had owned a dairy farm, and we were brought up there. The funny thing, it was pretty hard going there too, because that was just after the slump.
Yeah.
You see, and we had no money we had no facilities much.
But dairy farms were small then, weren't they?
We only milked 35 cows. He brought up the family with 35 cows.
And how many children in the family?
Five boys.
So you were all helping run the farm, you were working on the farm?
Well, we used to have turnabouts. He used to get us out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to have turnabout.
Did you grow a lot of your own vegetables?
One thing, he had a marvellous garden. He was a great gardener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that common? That was the way people lived?
It was like that. Well, you know, you didn't have much, and of course, you know, if you could produce something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it was a way of living, and of course we had plenty of milk and cream and that sort of thing.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. And we used to have pigs too. We used to take the milk to the factory.
Yeah.
Collect the whey, bring the whey back, and then had troughs. We used to feed these pigs.
Okay, so you were in the South Island, and you had pigs, and yet they referred to the North Island.
Pig Islanders. Yes, so there were a lot more pigs up here, I think, than down there.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think there were better educated pigs down there.
Yeah. Okay. Now, your father was in the First World War, but did that have much of an impact on you? And then being at school to
Second
World War?
He was a great teacher.
Yeah.
He used to take us out shooting rabbits and fishing.
Yeah.
He was a very, very keen fisherman.
Okay.
And he took us fishing a lot. Mm. Even down in the creeks, he used to take us down. We had spears and he had this old carbide lamp. I can remember. Do you remember the old carbide lamp?
Oh, Pat? Only vaguely.
Yeah, yeah. And they used to give quite a good thing, and you could see in the water with these carbide lamps, and here he was in his long waders going through the creek, and he'd have a spear there, and he'd spear them.
Ah.
Spear the trout.
Now, and the spear for fish, what were the was it one point or several prongs on
three,
them?
Three
prongs.
Yeah.
Okay, like the trident, sort of.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, it wasn't. The spikes were in fairly close.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so a few centimetres apart, but that's all.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
And was it easy to... Did you catch fish that way as well?
Oh, no, not really. So we used to try go along. We could go along used to go along with us with a fork, actually, an old hay fork.
Aye.
Spear underneath him. Uh-huh. We'd get the odd one, but very, just occasionally.
Yeah, well, I think the refraction in the water makes it difficult.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So then you were at school during the Second World War.
Yes.
So did the war have much impact on you then?
No, not really. I remember my father being in the Home Guard.
Mm.
And I like to watch that program now that they have on TV.
Oh, Dad's Army.
Dad's Army.
Dad's Army.
Yeah.
That's quite funny.
Yes, that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but then, you came to the North Island, you came to Fielding and you settled here, and you were saying, first of all, you were buying stock for the works.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long did that last?
Oh, I suppose, let me see, it'll be 30 years, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's the main thing you were doing while you were working
here? Yes,
yeah.
Mm.
Okay, yeah.
But in the same time, I bought a property at Halcombe.
Yeah.
And we went to live out there, finally.
Mm.
After about, I've been in Fielding for about 8 years, I think, seven or eight years, and then I bought this property at Halcombe.
Mm.
And I farmed that. Well, it was only about 100 acres.
Yeah.
But I used to farm about 500 or 600 ewes and make fattened lambs and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And cattle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you just buy for Longburn Freezing Works?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Only one company.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yes, I was employed by them. They employed me to buy stock.
They were big freezing works then, weren't they?
Yes, yeah, and they built a new one down there
that
didn't last that long because of industrial trouble. They finally closed it.
A lot of industrial trouble at Longburn.
Yeah. It was, It stock sent home, and that was terrible.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in buying, was that, and there's the Fielding stockyards, did farmers take the stock there and you would buy from there, or would go out to the farms?
No, I used to go direct from the farm.
Okay.
I never bought anything much in here at all.
Yeah.
Not unless they were very short of stock and were wanting a bit more, perhaps.
Okay. It wasn't a
good way of doing it.
No, the yards were mainly for farmers wanting new stock, was it?
Although there's some of that stock wasn't perhaps as good as it might be. It wouldn't be of good enough to go to the freezing work, so they'd send it in here and a farmer would buy those and fatten them up a bit and...
Okay.
Make them a bit better, and
okay.
And then they'd get their buyer in and send those off.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm.
So you would have got to know quite a. You'd have regular business with the same farmers here.
Oh yes, nearly all the time. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I was very, very lucky in that way.
Yeah.
I had some great, great clients.
Yeah. So what sorts
and
of people
that you
there?
could rely on that they always let you know. Mind you, I used to keep in touch with them all the time too. I'd be ringing them up and saying, you know, is it time we did something about it? If I thought that he'd gone a bit long in ringing me.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. So what sort of people were the sheep farmers in the area?
Well, what sort?
Were they sort of mainly from local families or people moved in from elsewhere?
Well, yes, they were. Well, a lot of these places that were just farmed here anyway, and there'd been families that had been here for some years. Like Pat, you would have been a bit like that.
Yes, my grandfather came to Waiata in 1883.
Yeah,
he got his first section. You know, he worked on building the main truck railway to start with. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He came out as a very poor boy from Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of carved it out of the bush, but that's what they did in those days.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, look what happened up there at Kimbolton and Apathy.
Yes, yeah.
How they hacked it out of the bush there. Yeah.
Cliff, you mentioned about the rehab guys. That might be quite an interesting story to recount.
Yes. I had 15 or 20 of those chaps that I used to drive to Stockport. But some of them were under real hardship too.
Rehab, the return soldiers.
They had rehab farms. They were farms that were broken up, bigger properties, and they were split up into usually about 200 or 300 acres, wouldn't it, Pat?
Yeah, at the most, probably.
Okay. Yeah, so 200 odd acres.
A lot of them were smaller, weren't they?
So the land was already broken in?
Yes.
And were they viable farms for that time?
Oh, well, yes. They used to have what they call about 600 ewes in the originally.
Yes.
But then, of course, it got to the stage where they had to have more owned. And some of those blokes did increase those properties too. They might have bought the one next door and that sort of thing.
So,
but I can remember, like the first one that I ran across or came across with that really, they never told you much. Some of those chaps returning too, that you had to sort of dig it out of them a bit. But of course, some of them they couldn't help but find out. And one was a chap Banner out at Halcombe, Ernie Banner.
Ah, yeah.
And he was a Japanese prisoner of war.
Yeah, was he?
Yeah, and of course he was really in a very bad way when he came home.
Yeah.
He was only 7 stone when he came home, and he'd been a big man.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he ever really ever got over it either, but he actually did quite well with his.
Yeah.
He went into a certain breed of stock.
He had Suffolks, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And
did these people come from a farming background, or they?
Yes, a lot of them did.
So they knew they just needed some land.
That's right.
And the land they got, did they? It was all fenced and were there houses on it for them to live in?
Yes, there was a house and
everything
house,
provided.
House and a wool shed and yards.
Okay.
Yes, that was all done.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and of the ones who came to this area, that they were all they all managed to succeed on the farms. Because areas the land is it bridged to nowhere?
That's right. Well, we never had anything like that.
No.
Yeah.
The properties were a lot better here than what they were. Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah, that's a sad story, that one, isn't it?
Absolutely.
First World. That was after the First World War. Up the Whanganui River.
So how were they allocated?
Oh, they used to go in for these ballots, didn't they? They used to put their name in that they wanted to go farming.
Yeah.
And they used to put their name forward, and then their name would be drawn out of a hat, really, I think, virtually.
Okay. Yeah. And were they actually given the farm, or they had the right to,
oh, no,
to go
no,
there
no,
and,
they
and
had,
gradually
they
buy
had,
it?
They had to have a certain amount of money. Invested in it.
Yes.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
I think it was quite cheap loans, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, they did get cheap money, all right.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think what was a big help to those chaps was that they were very good at helping one another. Like, if they wanted a hand in the wool shed or wanted a hand drafting or whatever, or a little bit of work doing, they used to help one another.
Would they have known each other from their war service?
No.
No.
Okay. No, a lot of them only knew when they met up here.
Yeah.
They used to have what they called return soldiers, club rooms and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they weren't necessarily from this area?
No. Oh, no, they were from all over the place.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Hmm. There's one chap that came from Ekatia that he used to drive near. He was a very bad case because during the war he was taken in Crete and he'd been captured and escaped and got captured again and he was finished up on a walk. They didn't have a camp for them to go to and they just kept walking him and they walked from Greece. Yeah. They walked right up through and through Germany.
Yeah.
And finished up on the near Holland, I think it was, when they finally finished.
Gosh.
And he got frostbite.
Yeah.
Lost one leg, one below the knee and one above the knee.
So while he was a prisoner, they amputated his.
There was a real story about that too.
Yeah.
You do catch them at certain times where they will tell you something.
Okay.
And I guess I was pretty lucky to have heard that, because one day when I was helping him draft, and I used to stop and give him a hand to load his stock, because he had trouble jumping over pens and pushing stock up, and so I used to stop and give him a hand.
Okay. Now, he had one leg amputated below the knee, the other above the knee.
Yeah.
And he had artificial legs.
Yeah.
And he couldn't run, presumably.
No, he couldn't run.
Did he have walking? How did he move around? He could walk with walking sticks, or just...
No, he had a horse.
Oh, he went by... Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had a horse. He used to be able to climb up that horse. Very, very strong chap, and strong arms. And, and of course, he had... Oh, gosh, he even made himself a special thing so he could dag his sheep and that sort of thing. Oh, he was a tough rooster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh. And a great guy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these people, they come here as single men and then start their farms and marry and raise a family?
No, well, that's right. He did raise a family there, too.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure about whether he's... Don't know whether he was married. Don't know whether he was married before he came here or not.
Hmm.
I think he was. I think he might have been.
Yeah.
Because he came from way over Akatia way. And but anyway, when he did get here, he had to have his legs done again. Or the story was, as he told me, that when he first went. When they had their final camp, they couldn't go any further.
Mm.
They used to live on Swedes and anything, eat cats and dogs. Yeah, they used to kill them and to eat, to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, he was telling me that he got this frostbite. He said, there's one good thing about it. He said, I sold my boots quite well.
Yeah.
but anyway, He went to the camp, and anyway, the German said to him, the German doctor, when he went there, he said, I can't do you. He said I wouldn't have enough anaesthetic to do it. So anyway, old Doug, he said, just go back to camp. So he went back to the camp, and he said, he got on that bus again the next morning, and he said, when the time to come back to the camp, he said, I made sure that I wasn't available. And he said, I was presented in front of the doctor again. He said, I said to you yesterday that I can't do you. And then old Doug said, I wouldn't have enough anaesthetic. He said, oh, you've got some. Oh, well, he said, yes, we've got some. But he said, I wouldn't have enough. He said, I don't care. He said, do it.
If he hadn't had it done, he would have died?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he would have,
Yeah.
Poisoned,
yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. But anyway, he survived and brought up a family there, and you know, that was it.
Mm.
Then there was another chap that I just dealt with, was a chap, you might have known this chap, Vin Freeman.
Vin Freeman. Doug's father, was it?
Doug's father?
Yes, yeah.
Well, he was at Colditz Castle.
Was he?
He was a prisoner, German prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And he finished up in Colditz Castle, of all places.
Oh.
It was a pretty tough
guy. So he must have escaped two or three times before they put him in there. Because that was for the most troublesome one, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he even escaped from there, but they got him again.
Gosh.
They knocked him around a bit after that, too.
I was going to say, it's wonder they didn't shoot him.
Yeah.
But anyway, he survived, and he was a very good farmer, too.
Part of Short Estate, or old Ernest Short's piece across the river, down Forlongs Road. Some of them were rehab farms, weren't they?
Oh yes, they were too.
They took some of Ernest Short's land.
That's right. Yeah.
And split it up for about three of the rehab guys.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
It's now all part of Land Corp.
Yeah, I was going to say, so how was that allocation made? The government just said, right, we need some land, we want some from you, and you, and they compensated people?
He was a big farmer, though, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah.
Huge farmer.
And that's what happened at Halcombe there, too, with the manor properties.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
See, they were split up quite a bit. Yeah.
So what was the basis of the decision making for that? Did the landowners have much say in
that? I don't know. No, this was separated by the river, or whether they thought that's a natural barrier which makes it awkward to get stock across. Although I think old Ernest Short, he built the little bridge, didn't he?
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
not sure about that.
At Armidale.
Yeah.
Someone reckoned that was.
Short
built that.
Okay. Now, in your days working in this area, though, I know there's sometimes been floods that have affected the farming and so on.
Floods?
Yeah.
Oh yes. Well, that was an ongoing thing. You never quite know just what's going to happen with that. Well, I mean, if you weren't in the middle of, if you didn't have the mustard or something, well, it just sort of left them where they were. Or shifted them if you had to. If you had to shift stock, well, you just used to have to.
Yeah. So was it something that people could handle, or normally at a flood of beer?
Well, yes, it was a bit awkward because you'd be gathering your sheep up to make sure they were accommodated for food, and they'd probably eat the paddocks out of it.
Yeah.
While they were like that, but eventually it came free again. Although there were some of those bad floods, the pasture got all dirty and mucked up.
Silted up.
Yeah. Wasn't too good.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.